Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. As you can tell, I'm not Lori Siebert, but this is her show. My name is Bill Henderson, and I'm here with Chris Holland. We both work for Valley National Financial Group. Today is April 8th, 2026. The markets were all up today. The Dow Jones closed up 1,325 points to close at 47,910, a 3% increase. The S&P 500 was up 166 points to close at 6,783, up about 2.5%. And the NASDAQ was up 617 to close at 22,635, also up 3%. The 10-year U.S. Treasury closed the day at 4.24. Our topic tonight is the first quarter market review and historical perspectives. We're live in the studio, and we will take your questions. Cindy is in studio with us and will answer the phone and take your calls and all the information. We just ask that you mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. While I will typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and we will do our best to answer them. The call-in number tonight is 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Cindy, and she will bring it in to us. Our email is also available at www.yourfinancialchoices.com. Our bios, I'll keep them brief. Chris and I, Chris Holland, and I am Bill Henderson once again, have been in the investment industry for over 30 years each. We specialized in bond or stock portfolio management and research. We both have advanced degrees in business management, but truthfully, time on Wall Street or simply the street far outweighs a degree. We hope to have a lively discussion tonight about what happened in the first quarter of 2026 and what we expect for the rest of the year. So let's start off with a quick review of the first quarter. Chris, you want to get us started with, you know, I think the beginning of the year, the first 2 months were a lot different than the third month, and a little bit of fun happened in between. You want to talk about that?
It's definitely been an exciting first 3 months to 2026. As you mentioned, we started out the year on pretty strong footing. We exited 2025 with expectations for continued double-digit earnings growth. And there was a theme that was kind of emerging in the market that I think a lot of people welcomed. It's this idea of a broadening out of the market rally. 2025 was as I think we've said here, it was an impressive year, double-digit gains. But a lot of those gains were concentrated in a very tight concentration of stocks that are weighted towards AI, technology-related spending in that particular vertical. But as we started out 2026, we started to see some emergence of some new themes and some new strength in the market, you know, particularly, you know, the idea that, hey, hopefully 2026, we would see some lower interest rates. And the idea was that would be definitely welcome. And one spot I think that a lot of people were hoping to see some improvement in was the housing market. So we started to see housing stocks just, you know, to call out one space and then all the derivative plays off of that as well. So think about like companies that supply into that particular vertical. We saw some nice strength there. And we saw some other spots that were doing well. Think about like industrial companies, this big theme of we're going to reshore some manufacturing capacity back here into the United States. And we've heard a lot about the significant investments that were going to be made. And that produces some beneficiaries. If you think about companies like Caterpillar, you think about some of the steel producers, you know, so we saw this nice theme of broadening in the market. We kind of moved through January and February. Markets were up nicely. And then, you know, end of February, we kind of things kind of turned upside down a little bit.
Yeah. Last year, President Trump hit us with the tariff tantrum, and we took a big shellacking on Liberation Day. And, you know, we worked through that. But this year with the Israel and U.S., you know, attack on Iran, it has really impacted markets, I think, probably more than a lot of people thought, and added the thing you and I hate the most, volatility and uncertainty. As you know, we've talked a lot about that on the show. But, you know, the big thing people have been worried about is energy. And I read about, oh, the U.S. is energy independent. We have all the energy we need. But yet it impacted our markets. So it's not like we just have our own energy and we can just rely on that. And why is that? Why is the Strait of Hormuz such as this critical choke point for oil? And why has it impacted the world markets, specifically the U.S. markets on energy, and then those knock-on impacts on the U.S. economy?
Yeah, like when you think about energy markets and crude oil prices specifically, you have to think about it. This is a global commodity, so it's impacted by more than just what the U.S. supplies and the U.S. demands. When there's an interruption to a key supply region of the world, it's definitely going to impact prices overall. I think that's maybe a little bit confusing to some people when you think about they hear West Texas Intermediate. That's one variety of crude oil. And then there's Brent crude. So there's these different varieties. The U.S. is a producer of one type. We have refining capacity for particular types of oil. There's other oil that comes out of the ground here in the U.S. and we ship that abroad so it could be refined in their particular types of refining capacity. So there's a lot of moving parts to it. But bottom line, when we see a lot of uncertainty in the Middle East, it's definitely going to impact oil prices and that's going to impact consumers potentially.
Yeah, it's a great point that you bring up the Middle East. I looked out over the last maybe 15 incidences where there was some type of military action, and most of them were in the Middle East. I mean, it's unbelievable how much happens over there, and it's always about oil. It's always like this issue, and I'm glad you explained a little bit about why energy is not just a thing for us to worry about in the U.S., even though we say we are the largest producer of oil right now, which is a phenomenal change from where things were 10 years ago. But also, you know, we still rely on all the world's production, and it kind of goes into this giant fungible barrel where you pull out what you need and you put in what other folks may need. So another unique thing that happened over the time period from the end of February to the end of March that was bizarre, we have seen historically a lot of times we see this flight to quality, flight to safety. Everybody talks about, oh my gosh, this is happening. Buy U.S. treasuries. That's the place to be. Now, we did see a brief rally in treasuries immediately when this thing started. But as it dragged on, we started to see a sell-off. And there wasn't this big flight to safety. Is there any particular reasons why that was the case? Why was that different and uniquely different than a lot of other times?
Yeah, I think there's two reasons. If you think about it, specifically the impact that higher oil prices, what impact that's going to have on inflation and inflation going forward. And what that means for the Fed's decision making in the coming, you know, months and quarters and their ability to hopefully lower interest rates. If inflation is running too hot, that kind of hinders their ability to do that, to move forward with that. But then another variable is if we're involved in some sort of, war of some sorts, and, you know, we're going to have to finance that war. So the U.S. is going to have to issue more debt, more supply coming to market. It means they're going to have to offer a little bit higher yield just to simplify it. So you have this threat of higher inflation and you have this threat of more debt that needs to be raised. That kind of, I think, is what kind of created this unusual dynamic that, you know, you kind of imply. Usually, you know, people get scared, you run to treasuries. But that didn't really play out so much this time.
Yeah, and it was interesting. It has been interesting over almost since a little bit after the pandemic that gold has been, you know, this huge commodity that people run to now in times of fear. And what we did see is a lot of countries were potentially selling U.S. treasuries and buying gold in place of that, which could be some of the reason why both have been flat on treasuries, but gold has risen so much. So we'll be right back after a break.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am in the studio with Bill Henderson and Chris Holland this evening talking about the markets, the first quarter review, and we're going to talk about some historical perspectives as well. But I do want to remind our listeners that we are in our WDIY Spring Fund Drive, and we really would appreciate any additional contributions you may make, new contributions, just some extra. Become a sustaining member if you like. You can do that on the web at wdiy.org and click the button to donate. Or you can also call this evening and make a donation at 610-758-8810. Or if you have questions, we welcome questions. Again, at 610-758-8810. We have Bill and Chris here this evening. If you have questions about the markets, and I'm shadowing in the studio this evening if you have a tax question, but I'll be here next week as well. But we appreciate any support you can give to us during our Spring Fund Drive. And I'm going to give it back to Bill and Chris. Thank you, Bill and Chris.
Great. Thanks,
Lori. Thank you, Lori. As you can tell, I was a little late on the going to the break there. I'll do a much better job here on out. So thank you, Lori. Chris, let's get right back into it here. You mentioned we've talked about oil, Middle East. What else? Is there anything else that – so the Strait – allegedly 20% of the oil comes through the Strait of Hormuz, a specific type, like you said. You know, it's generally the OPEC, that type of crude oil that comes through there. What else comes through there that could have a knock-on effect on inflation that is worrisome?
So there's two other things I'll call out here. Fertilizer. It's something that people really don't think about. Hey, you know, we think of the Middle East, that area of the world, and the people automatically think energy. But fertilizer is a key commodity that comes out of that area, and that's going to impact just if you think about grain prices potentially in the months to come. Now, hopefully this is a temporary speed bump. It's feeling better today, but that's something that has caught a lot of, you know, a lot of folks off guard. And then helium. Yes, helium, Bill. it's something that does come out of the Middle East, and it is used in some specialized manufacturing of microchips and different technology pieces of equipment. So that tiny little, commodity that comes out of that area of the world, it's something that's very much in demand right now. If supply is going to be impacted, it's going to push up pricing all the way down the chain. So just two other areas where, you know, there's that potential for inflation to kind of reignite a little bit, cause some concern, and maybe just damage the purchasing power of the average consumer.
Yeah, I did see the fertilizer comment earlier, and they had interviewed whatever I was listening to, interviewed farmers. Now, luckily, farmers for this year have already loaded up on fertilizer, so the prices aren't going to impact this year. But if this continues, you could see, again, food prices increases, which could be the, you know, back to the inflation thing. And hopefully helium will come down. So, and if not, we'll have that many fewer balloons at my daughter's wedding this year. You know, so.
Maybe one other thing to mention, Bill. I know, like, natural gas, that is something else that has seen a lot of volatility over the last couple of weeks. Now, fortunately, in the U.S., we are a heavy manufacturer, or we have a lot of supply of natural gas. But if that's something that's very difficult to transport, so much of Europe, much of Asia, they rely on that region of the world for their natural gas. So while if you take, you know, just taking a look at natural gas prices that we pay attention to here in the U.S., they've been relatively flat over the last, you know, call it 4 or 5 weeks. But if you look at natural gas, how it's priced in other areas of the world, Europe particularly, they've seen a dramatic spike higher. So, it's fortunate for some of these areas where the U.S. is a little bit insulated, but for other parts of the world, they've really been impacted this pretty, severely.
Yeah, we are a really big exporter of LNG, liquefied natural gas, and that comes about from the previous Trump administration that did change the Jones Act a bit, where previously we had to export liquefied natural gas in U.S. chartered ships only. So they waived it during that time. So we are able to send LNG outside of our the U.S. using other ships. So that was a change. Hopefully it'll increase supply and help out Europe. But I read today there's quite a number of countries that rely on all the shipments of energy through the Strait of Hormuz, which is a pretty big deal. Like, we don't think of it as impacting the U.S. much, but globally there are countries where they have to import all their energy, everything. And this is going to impact them a lot more. And, hopefully this will come to an end, which, we got a two-week truce last night, and then it's a little shaky today, but the market seemed to be counting that this will be a more significant truce than just 2 weeks. So since we did see the third quarter end, in a pretty downward period on that last, on this Iran event. But with today's rally, we've almost taken back the losses. Year to date, the Dow is down, one-third of 1%. The S&P is down about 1%, and the NASDAQ is down about 2.5%. So we have really clawed back a lot of those losses, which brings us to the point that we've talked about on the show, at least all the times I've been on and all the times with Lori, about this, like, we're constantly worried and want to sell. We want to sell at the worst time. Oh, my gosh, look at this. I'm worried. Please take me out of the market. And you and I have talked about the term called the Wall Street Wall of Worry. You want to tell the listeners a little bit about why that exists and why you and I think it's like this false myth that we're always going to conquer.
Yeah, at any given time, there's going to be, a number of risks out there on the horizon that, professional investors and the media are going to constantly kind of speak to, that investors just kind of have to, so to speak, almost become numb to a little bit. It's important to stay conscious of, what some of these risks are. I know late last year, the risks that you and I were talking about were, hey, we have elevated valuations. Another risk was, well, AI is going to take away a lot of the job growth potential in the U.S. economy. Or another risk is, hey, this trade and tariff situation that started last year, it's going to reemerge. It's going to be a problem. At any given time, I think you and I, we can rattle off a half dozen risks, things that we're paying attention to, but really never come to fruition. Or they don't really show up in the extent that, naysayers may expect them to.
Yeah, I think when I look back at, I can't believe it's almost 40 years of doing this, and starting with the SNL crisis and then the dot-com bust and then 9/11, the GFC, which was, a really long time period, and then we had the, COVID and the tariff event last year. It's always something that we can be concerned about. But, when I look at the economy and the U.S. economy in particular right now, but, a lot of the rest of the world's economies are in pretty decent shape. I still see, solid underpinnings with this current wave of, unknown angst hanging over the markets. And, if we get through it, it'll be just one more, thing on this chart from the bottom left to the upper right that we've gotten through and worked through it. And I'd much rather have, short-term events than something that's catastrophic like the GFC or COVID that really impacted the economy for a long period.
I agree with you. At any given time, if you just look past, over the last 3 or 4 years, in addition to, the COVID scare that kind of shook the market, we had that mini banking crisis where we had a few banks that kind of became unstable. The government had to come in and rescue them. But things were solved pretty quickly. We got back on track. The economy continued to grow.
Okay, we're coming up on our next break. Remember, the call-in number is 610-758-8810. Thank you for listening.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show at Your Financial Choices. And tonight it is our annual spring fun drive. We are looking for listeners to consider WDIY in your giving and showing your support for programs such as Your Financial Choices and many of our other locally hosted shows that we do here. You can do your donation through the website wdiy.org or by calling 610-758-8810. You can also call that number for questions this evening. We are live. We can take your questions, or you can just give your question to Cindy and she'll bring it in. But it is an important fundraising event for us, our spring fund drive, to help keep these programs on the air as funding gets harder and harder. So we really would appreciate your support, either with an additional donation or becoming a member if you have not in the past supported us. And again, you can do that at wdiy.org. And just so you know, Valley National Financial Advisors will donate meals to Second Harvest Food Bank or help support meals at Second Harvest Food Bank for those donations that you are making. So it's like an extra benefit. So we really hope that you consider contributing and supporting us this evening. Back to Bill Henderson and Chris Holland.
Great. Thanks, Lori. So I think we've talked about the first quarter. Let's start looking to the second quarter and kind of keep it in that area. I know it's hard to predict 3 months. It's easier to predict 3 years. People would think that's crazy, but that's the way I feel. And, you know, let's start off. We're going to try and stump each other tonight, Chris, with some. We talk about movies a lot. I'm going to give you, it could be a softball, but it might not be. When was this said? And what movie? Short Everything That Man Has Touched.
Ooh, I know this. I know this. This is from The Big Short. Right. And I think it's when Steve Carell met with someone who was marketing some sort of fancy debt instrument of some kind.
Exactly. It was the Big Short. Mark Baum was the character.
Yep.
And it was Steve Carell was the actor. And
great movie.
Great movie. Great way to learn about the GFC, the Great Financial Crisis, and what caused it. And it was knuckleheads like the thing that guy who was shorting, you know, not Mark Baum, but man, it was just crazy with CDOs and all that. So really, I don't think we're anywhere near that situation right now in our economy, anywhere. What destroyed the U.S. in 07, 08, and 09 was a housing crisis and then a complete lack of confidence in your trading partners. And then that went right into banks and insurance companies and just brought the whole economy down. So looking, you know, I think banks are in great shape. We haven't heard, when was the last time we heard about a bank stress test? Right. Nobody seems to care. Banks are in great shape. They're willing to lend. But the housing market is still a little sticky. I know you mentioned it. It was getting off the ground. You know, what do you think could rebound the housing market other than, like, well, Bill, we're 4 million homes short right now in the U.S. But what could help right now to get the housing market going?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's timely because right now, typically, this time of the spring is when the big national home builders kind of talk about, hey, this is the key selling season. It's a great time of the year when people who have been considering maybe putting their house on the market, they'll make the decision. You know, the weather's starting to turn a little bit. It's a great time for people to go out and shop and consider looking for a new house. And but I think the big, you know, variable is definitely going to be interest rates. And I know we did see the 10-year treasury. It did drop below 4%. I believe it was sometime in February, and that was really encouraging because at that point, the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage fell below 6%. And a lot of, you know, market experts and folks in the housing industry more recently have been using that as kind of the inflection point. Once we dip below that 6% kind of range, that's where we start to see some increased foot traffic for people who are out there looking. So if we can just get the rate picture, you know, we saw some, I think, some encouraging signs today. The yield on the 10-year Treasury, I think, was down quite a bit. Back around like 420, and that's down.
424, yeah.
And remember last week, there was one day it was up at 440, and you know it was spiking. Concerns were elevated, but it's good to see we're moving in the opposite direction, which is more encouraging for hopefully just some improved housing activity.
And yeah, we should point out, why are we talking about the 10-year Treasury and not, you know, the Fed and interest rates? Well, the Fed, Jerome Powell right now, incoming Warsh, is that they control short-term interest rates, and that's the rate that banks borrow between banks. It doesn't control the mortgage market. The mortgage market roughly floats over the 10-year Treasury, and like Chris said, it had a load this year of 384, a high of around 445, and today, you know, just about 4.25. Still not enough to get below 6% for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, but if it does, I did see a couple of ads like maybe a month ago for 5.99 mortgage. If you think about, like, over the last 30 years, 5.99 isn't a horrible level if you had to get a 30-year mortgage. You know, it's a reasonable place to borrow. So I agree with you. I think that we're coming into the housing season, which is most people want to buy new homes after the school year, but before the other school year, it's tough to move kids. And if we see a little bit of a turnover there, housing prices are at sort of a pretty elevated rate. So maybe there's a lot of folks that saying, look, now's the time to get out. At the same time, there's folks that are willing to get in when we can get a mortgage rate below 6%. So potentially we'll see a rebound there. I do agree with that. So how about go ahead.
Yes. So maybe just something else to kind of bring up here. Like, you know, so I was kind of speaking to the demand side of the equation. If you think about supply, like how can we improve the supply of homes that are on the market or the supply of homes that these big national builders can build? I know there's been some discussion about the permitting process. How could we make it a little bit easier for, you know, developers and builders to get access to land in markets where it's needed? There's a lot of hurdles, a lot of obstacles. It's a very challenging situation, I think, that's been talked about a lot. I know there's been some talk, you know, at least prior to this war situation out of Washington, how could they help improve that process a little bit? How could they help make it move along a little bit quicker, make it easier? So I think it's, you know, demand and supply is kind of part of the challenge. So we're challenged on almost like both sides of that right now.
We are. And there's a great book called How Parking Describes the U.S. I think it's How Parking Describes the United States. You can look it up. I learned about it on listening to NPR, but it's written by a Philadelphia native. And they talk about one of the difficulties in building a home is required parking spaces. You know, when I know we've talked about it here, but Minnesota, specifically Minneapolis-St. Paul, recently altered their housing policy to not require like this sort of national dotted line idea of 1.5 parking spaces. That's what we need to do. I mean, especially if you're living in an area where you don't need two cars anymore. You need one car or maybe ride sharing or a car, you know, a Waymo car. You don't need a parking spot at all. So those are some of the things that I think could improve the housing market. So three things: rates, supply, and then, you know, loosen these restrictions and regulations on building, not to the point where it gets dangerous to build or anything stupid like that, but, you know, maybe add a little common sense to regulations. That would be a big help.
And also just if you think about just overall consumer confidence, if this, you know, Middle East conflict does start to subside, we do see a clear picture to a truce that's going to last, it makes the average consumer just feel a little bit more optimistic and positive about the future. So a lot of elements, I feel like, are in a spot where they can definitely help. So, but that's just another big, big factor there.
It makes a really big difference.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to take on a large mortgage if you're worried about your job or you're worried about the economy? And we'll see. So we are coming up on the 6:30 break. Reminder to you, the call-in number is 610-758-8810, and we are taking your calls live in the studio. Thanks again for listening.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. on the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is Lori, and we have in the studio with us this evening Bill Henderson, Chief Investment Officer, and Chris Holland, Director of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. This is our Spring Fund Drive. We'd like to remind you ways to give, 610-758-8810. That's also the number for questions. Again, 610-758-8810. We haven't had anyone call in or make a donation, but we would really appreciate to show your support for this programming here on WDIY. You can do that through that number or WDIY.org and hit donate. Thank you, and we're going to welcome back Bill and Chris.
Thank you, Lori. So, Chris, let's keep going into the second quarter here and talk about what are you seeing out there beyond housing. Actually, let's talk about next week. Next week's a big tax day.
Yep.
What are the predictions? What are we seeing?
I think right now, like, you know, you and I kind of talk in the office that this year is kind of, you know, presenting a unique situation. There are expectations that, you know, the average U.S. consumer is going to see a pretty nice bump higher in their tax refund. And that's an element of stimulus that could help the economy. And it's something that, you know, we're fortunate to have. I think it's going to help a lot of people. And it's part of the bill, right? Correct? The big, beautiful.
One big, beautiful bill.
There
amendment.
You go. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. So, you know, that's a nice little piece of economic stimulus that I think is going to help us, hopefully. I know there's been some companies such as like Home Depot and Lowe's on their earnings conference calls. They're encouraged that, hey, that could provide a little bit of boost to their business as the weather breaks. People, you know, their plans to maybe make some improvements to their home. All of a sudden, they have a little bit more money that's, you know, available to them.
Yeah, I think we have not calculated in the big increase in tax refunds we're going to see. And that goes right to the consumer. And the good thing about the consumer is they get a little more money in their pocket and they're going to spend. So, again, we got to get through the current unknown situation and then go next. So one thing I want to talk a lot about tonight is it's been talked about probably everywhere for the last 4 years is artificial intelligence. And 3 years ago, we saw, like, the discussion of it was enough to move a company's stock. 2 years ago, it was, oh, now we're spending, you know, billions of dollars. Last year, we saw, like, the hyperscalers spend, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. And you can give a definition of what the hyperscalers are or who they are. But I've started to use AI a lot more in processes I do and see if I can really make a difference. And some you can, some you can't. But, you know, what are we going to see from corporations in terms of improvements in earnings? How are we really going to see it? Because I've also seen these doomsday scenarios where 30% unemployment, that's not going to happen. It hasn't happened historically when we've had new technologies. I don't think it's going to happen this time.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. It's definitely a hot topic right now. I agree with you that we've kind of moved to this period in the evolution of artificial intelligence where we're moving maybe a little bit away from these big like hyperscaler type companies, NVIDIA, you know, Google, the companies that are kind of building AI to the point where I think the bigger opportunity, I think the opportunity is still big with these technology companies that have a big focus. But I think the bigger opportunity is going to be which companies in which industries can put AI to use and where can it be used as a new engine to help drive growth and find productivity and how they, you know, just deliver their service or build their product. And, you know, you and I, we talk about a couple companies, you know, most recently when they reported earnings. These are more traditional, not very sexy or exciting businesses. They will distribute like medical equipment or supplies, or they might be, you know, some sort of trucking company. But these are companies where you're hearing them mention on their conference call that they are leaning very heavily into using AI, and it's impacting their margins for their business. It's allowing their margins to really open up, and that's money that drops to the bottom line and allows their earnings to, like, you know, be larger and grow faster. So I'm encouraged by, you know, certain industries and companies that are calling it out specifically. And sometimes, you know, that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Everybody's very enamored with these big mega cap tech companies. They're always the hot topic. But underneath the surface, I think there's some really exciting stories and some industries that are going to benefit from it long term.
So one thing that really interests me, and we are, I think we're ahead of the world in a lot of AI development, a lot of data center development and building there. But when it comes to robots and what they're called dark factories, these are factories where there's no human needed, so they don't have lights on them. You know, China has probably over 1,000 dark factories. We really don't have any decent number of them here. And the areas where they have about 295,000 robots operating these factories, and the areas that it impacted the most, autos, so they're Chinese EV companies, Foxconn, the company that makes the Apple phone, and the other one, other is logistics, so delivery methods. You know, we're seeing drones. So they were able to displace 60,000 employees in their Foxconn plant with robots. That's huge. No, that would be major news here. In China, I guess they just repositioned them somewhere else or redeployed them. We're also seeing a big impact of AI and robots, meaning drones, in war. You know, good or bad, you know, mostly bad. Any war that is out to do what war does, I think, is bad. You're seeing Iran uses these Shahed drones. They're about $35,000 each. They're 9 feet long, 3 feet wide. They go 120 miles an hour. We're sending up $5 million rockets to take them out. You know, that math doesn't work. Every $35,000 drone they build is going to cost us $5 million. We can't do that. I think we need to get into that exact business and figure out how we're going to compete in the world with, you know, the robots. I'd like to see it more for, you know, manufacturing here in the U.S., and that doesn't mean we put people out of work. We have robotic factories all over. Most of our auto plants use robots already, so it's not as if it would be this big, meaningful shift in employment. They would just be working differently. You know, people have always been workers have been repurposed a lot over the years in the new jobs and new industries, so I'm not really concerned about that.
Yeah, I know over, I think it might have been yesterday or 2 days ago, Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan, kind of was at some sort of speaking event, and he called out specifically that, you know, he's very optimistic about the AI trend, that it is intact, that it makes a lot of sense. And he kind of even and threw out some eye-catching comments about, hey, AI has the potential, which it may sound crazy, to lower the average U.S. work week to 3.5 days. Just because the average worker can work that much more efficiently, they can get that much more accomplished in a shorter amount of time. He called out specific potential breakthroughs in certain areas of medicine, cancer specifically. So, you know, this is an individual who has his finger on the pulse of the economy. He sees where dollars are being spent. He talks to some of the smartest minds in the world, business leaders. So for him to make a statement like that, it's pretty you know, optimistic, gives you a lot of hope of, you know, and excitement for what's coming.
Yeah, I have a ton of respect for Jamie Dimon. And it's interesting, though, he's one of the first CEOs that ordered everybody back to the workplace for 5 days a week. But he also has, I think, 355,000 employees.
Yeah.
I mean, that's shocking, you know, a company that big. So let's move on to the next topic here, Chris. And that is, you know, other positive pieces of the economy that you see beyond what we've talked about so far. So we have taxes, AI. Specifically, where are we going to see growth, you know, moving forward? Like, where do we see it? Where do you see the most opportunity for growth in the U.S.?
Well, I'm always going to lean back on, like, the U.S. consumer. Like, the U.S. consumer, people, you know, economists, everyone points to the U.S. consumer as kind of like the bedrock, the driving force behind our economy. And a few days ago, there was someone from Bank of America, and they were talking about they collect a lot of metrics on credit card transaction volumes, dollar values, that sort of thing. And they specifically called out the month of March, knowing that, okay, this has been a very volatile month with what's going on in the Middle East. How has the consumer responded? And they were very, clear in saying that the consumer continues to spend. They even stripped out the impact that higher gas prices had. So they assume, like, let's take that impact out. Let's look what the average consumer is doing regardless of gasoline prices. And the numbers were pretty encouraging. So the U.S. consumer is, has momentum. They feel good. If we can, get through this uncertain situation over in the Middle East, the remainder of the year looks pretty promising. Like you and I always say, the average U.S. company, their balance sheet is in great shape. The average U.S. consumer, their balance sheet is in pretty good shape as well. So there's some really good elements in place that could help us deliver a pretty good year in 2026.
Yeah, consumer balance sheets are in excellent condition. You had so many homes that were bought the time immediately after COVID where interest rates were zero.
Yeah.
And that was an unbelievable.
It's like a once in a lifetime.
Once in a lifetime. Load on a low rate mortgage. That's not it. Consumer debt outstanding's low. Credit card balances are lower, but, they're not non-existent. It's interesting. I love high frequency economics. So watching credit card receipts, I watch airport checkpoints, TSA checkpoints. Probably not the best thing to be watching the last month, when they were really long, but they're still high. So people are still flying and traveling, just difference in spending. So you made a point there that I want to ask you about. You said higher gasoline prices could impact the consumer. I know when I look at my credit card bill, one of the biggest purchase line items is Amazon.com. So meaning I'm not driving out to get stuff, but stuff is coming to the house. And a lot of other service-oriented businesses, landscaping and areas where I see the receipt, are putting on fuel surcharges. Do you think that Amazon or some of these really big distributing companies, like for Amazon to add a surcharge when they're driving around in e-trucks or using UPS to deliver their goods, is going to be interesting?
I think for those very large companies, if you think about Amazon or UPS or even think about the airlines, energy prices, it's probably their second largest expense next to, just labor. And I think many of those companies actually will have some sort of hedging mechanisms that allows them to guard against certain spikes like we've seen in the market. Now, it's not going to blunt the impact down to zero, but it's going to take the edge off of it. So, we saw some of the airlines report earnings. I think Delta reported earnings.
Yeah, yesterday.
And the outlook was, pretty encouraging despite what we're seeing. And they've been through scenarios like this in the past. They know how to manage through it pretty well. And there's, financial vehicles available to them that kind of help them blunt that impact.
That's the hedging is excellent and that they do that. And you mentioned fertilizer earlier, and then I talked about the farmers. Big farming conglomerates, your Cargills of the world, and any type of area where they have feed, they have huge hedging teams that do this. So they're able to, hedge against big spikes in most fertilizer products. But I guess we're not, as consumers, we probably don't take out gas hedges to decide if I'm going to drive to the mall or take a vacation, although it might be something that you and I could invent and come up with, if we wanted to, like in our lack of free time. So let's see. On the other side of the break, we are going to talk about, a couple of big ideas going into the next quarter. And I hope you have some quotes for me. I have one more. This is a really easy one that I hope you're going to get. And it's one we have written on the, I use it a lot with people. If you need a friend, get a dog.
Classic quote from the movie Wall Street. I think Michael Douglas said it.
Yep. Gordon Gekko. Very good.
Great pull, Bill.
Yeah, right. Okay, so we're going into the 6:45 break. Reminder, the call-in is 610-758-8810.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're in the studio this evening with Bill Henderson, Chief Investment Officer, and Chris Holland, Director of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors, giving some market reviews and commentary, looking at some historical trends and, you know, what we have to look forward to for the rest of the year. It is our spring fund drive here at WDIY. We appreciate our listeners' support. We appreciate your support of our local programming and all of the volunteers and staff who bring that programming to you. Please show your support with a donation by calling 610-758-8810 or going online at WDIY.org, as well as supporting Second Harvest Food Bank with a matching contribution from Valley National Financial Advisors as to providing some meals in our local community. So again, 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org and click donate online, and we appreciate your support. Back to Bill and Chris.
Thank you, Lori. Okay, so Chris, let's get right into it. So we've talked about the first quarter, talked a little bit about what some thoughts are on the markets, but one thing, you know, you and I spend a lot of time looking at economic data, you know, a colossal amount of time, I would say. You know, people wait for the 830 number to come out, and then the markets move, and then an hour later they forgot what number came out. But, you know, the war, for as long or as short as it is going to impact a lot of economic data, because the numbers that get released from the government are usually like this period, you know, the weekly jobs number, the monthly PCE number, the monthly inflation number. So it's not like we're going to be able to ignore this. This is going to be impacted and impactful into the economic data. You know, what are you thinking? Where are the biggest impacts going to be when the time comes to look at that data and what's going to happen to the markets?
Yeah, the first thing I'd call out there is the Consumer Price Index. That's going to be released, I believe, on Friday, and I imagine it's going to look messy and concerning, and it has the potential to, create a lot of anxiety. But I believe that investors are going to look through it. If oil today was down, I believe, around $20, which is a very big move down, and it's encouraging to see. You know, hopefully things are. Some of the tensions are subsiding a little bit. It's probably not going to be, a V-shaped decision. I'm sure there's going to be some, like we heard later in the day today, hey, is the ceasefire really holding? No, it's not. I'm sure we're going to bounce around here for a couple of days. But if the belief is that the worst is behind us and, okay, oil directionally hopefully should start to head in the other direction, hopefully these are just temporary numbers, and it's beyond just like the inflation numbers. So we get CPI, there's the PPI, there's retail sales. I'm sure when the retail sales number comes out for the month of March, people are going to do what I just kind of mentioned earlier. They're going to look at the whole number, but then they're going to say, hey, well, if we strip out energy, how did the consumer actually feel in the month of March? Where did they spend? Did they continue to spend? And other metrics, consumer confidence, I'm sure that's going to be a pretty volatile and concerning metric. But the whole idea is, which I think many investors have, gotten more comfortable with, is just trying to understand the duration of this uncertainty. How long can it last? And then just think more big picture. Is the economy going to continue to grow? Likely, yes. Could the growth slow down a little bit because of this uncertainty in the Middle East? Sure. But is it going to stop? Probably not. Are the United States' largest and most powerful companies, the industry leaders, are they still going to be able to compete, innovate, and grow? Yes. So if I think investors are becoming more and more comfortable with that idea that what is a short-term, speed bump versus like hitting a wall? I know that I'm stealing a quote from you. I know you dropped that in the office over the last couple of days. versus, something that's going to be very long-term impactful. And I think right now, hopefully we get to that point where investors feel more comfortable that this is hopefully a short-term situation that is hopefully going to resolve itself, and that the economy has some really nice momentum to it. There's some really good ingredients still in place to, continue to grow.
Okay, so we did get a call-in question from Tim in Oklahoma City. So that's a great thing about the internet. Everybody can listen. So it's about data centers, and I'll take a stab at this, and then I want your opinion. Upheaval. There's a lot of upheaval in the community about putting new data centers everywhere. I mean, I am reading a lot about that. Some communities aren't in favor of it. Do we have any thoughts on this? So I think that's a little bit – sometimes it's a little bit overblown. It's kind of like this hot thing to pick on, you know, why are we building another data center? But when you do look at the concentration of data centers, they're around certain parts of the country. Some states have none. Some have most of them. Like Virginia has this colossal amount. I wonder why. I wonder who's near Virginia that has a lot of data on its citizens. Never mind. But they mentioned some of the negatives. Oh, they suck up all the water. They suck up all the energy. You know, is that bad? But when you look at the actual water use after they get installed, they're able to recycle a lot of the water for cooling. The energy, the big move I'm seeing is instead, yeah, you want to build this mega data center project that's going to be 1 mile long and four stories high. Great. Guess what? Build a power plant. Put a small modular reactor on site, and that's how you're going to fund it. Out of that comes the building jobs that have to build those two things, and then ongoing jobs to sort of monitor the data center. It really doesn't take much. Once in a while, you pull out a server, shove in a new one. But ongoing taxes and property taxes are being paid to those municipalities. So I'm not so worried. I think in great times like this, people are not as desperate for that. But if times were tough, I think they'd be everywhere. It's like, you know, trash piles. Nobody wants those, but they seem to be everywhere.
Yeah, and I feel like the companies that are building these, they are thoughtful about where they're placing them. My view is that these likely are just fringe situations where absolutely, you know, there's a lot of building activity. But I do think that the companies that are building them, like I said, do, you know, consider all these different variables that come into play. The impact it's going to have on the local community. What's it going to do to energy prices? You know, I absolutely agree. And I've seen similar headlines about, you know, local governments or just state governments saying, hey, that's fine. You're more than welcome to build that facility here, but you have to secure your own power generation. And fortunately, you know, like we said earlier, we have lots of natural gas. So there's more natural gas being used to power a lot of these facilities. There was the story, I believe, late last year where Microsoft made a pretty significant investment in Three Mile Island because they want to secure access to the power needed to, you know, run their data centers. And I think that last point is kind of interesting. Like if you think about Microsoft and the decision makers they have there and their willingness to make a commitment of that size and that magnitude shows their belief that this is not a short-term theme. This is a long-term secular trend that's in place. You know, the companies that are spending these dollars are very thoughtful and analytical and do an enormous amount of research before they spend a dollar. So, you know, I think that's somewhat encouraging. But going back to like, you know, hopefully those situations about the noise and disturbance that data centers, hopefully those are very rare cases and can be alleviated. You know, there's constantly new technology coming to market, you know, that can hopefully alleviate some of these concerns.
Yeah, and if you Elon Musk's theory of, you know, building data centers in space and having them run off the giant fusion reactor called the sun would be terrific if we were to see that. But that's a really good question. Thank you for calling in, Tim. We appreciate that. So, Chris, let's get close to wrapping up here. I am when I look at the remaining three quarters of the year, I mostly look at the underlying fundamental data. I still think the consumer's in good shape. Bad news is always worse news on Wall Street. Okay, just remember that. I really believe people love to have bad news and then trade on it. You know, we do not trade on that. The worst time to sell is when no one knows what's going on. Oh, let me sell. And we've talked to a lot of clients over the last month or so to assuage their concerns and say, you know, I look at this and I think we're going to be in great shape. Pay attention to the underlying tea leaves of the economy, not sort of this temporary wall of worry that Wall Street seems to always get through. And I am confident that, you know, the thing for us to worry about the most is, you know, unknown unknowns. Everybody knew we were going to attack Iran. You know, it just was, when's it going to happen and how long is it going to last? So they're the two parts of that that are unknown. And it doesn't worry me as much, but a prolonged event, and I think the administration will lose everybody's support if this becomes a quagmire. And I'm hoping that it isn't, and I'm hoping that it's completely different. And then I look to the housing market that you talked about, taxes that could be higher, and then the continued AI spend is incredible, you know, with the jobs that comes out of that. So that's incredible. And I do believe that employees will be just become more efficient, not priced out of jobs over the long run.
Yeah, I'm definitely optimistic about, you know, the outlook for the remainder of the year. You know, you mentioned we pay very close attention to economic metrics that come out. I know there's been a lot of concern about the employment market. We saw a really good report there last Friday. Now, I know it was markets were closed, but there was still a ton of attention on, hey, what has the unemployment rate looked like in the month of March? And did we add more jobs? Both metrics looked very good. And there's also the weekly number you and I talk about, the weekly jobless claims number. That number continues to hover at like a super low point. So it is encouraging to see that the employment market, despite all these fears and concerns, continues to hold up pretty well. And as I mentioned, like some of these smaller data points related to the condition of the consumer through this month of March, where we saw a lot of uncertainty, it seems like the consumer is holding up pretty well. And then just the outlook for earnings for the remainder of the year. Like one of the things that got us off to a pretty solid start in 2026 was we saw earnings results for the fourth quarter of 2025. They looked very good. And the outlooks that corporate America was giving for the remainder of the year looked very encouraging. So a lot of good elements are in place. Like if we can get through these next couple weeks, you know, really happy, like you said, to see, you know, hopefully some sort of resolution in the works here. The market loved to see it. You know, you and I, you know, we talk about this stuff constantly.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. One thing we didn't talk at all about, it wasn't even brought up, was, you know, this government shutdown and this quagmire. There, if there's a quagmire, it's Washington. Both sides of the aisle are just doing a disservice to the American people. And I wish they would figure that out and get through it. But, you know, that's a whole different story. I'm glad we didn't spend any time on that. That tells you how little you and I talk about that in the office. Like, it's not something that we're so concerned about that we think it's going to have an impact. They'll get through it. They'll figure it out. And in the end, we'll probably say, who cares then, like we say, who cares now? Although it's sad that it impacts people's jobs. It is really sad. I have relatives that work at FEMA, good, loyal employees. And when they're not paid, they feel badly about that. And it's just, it's. I don't think it's nice to treat employees or citizens like that. You looked at the lines of the TSA. It was insane. Who has 4 extra hours of their day to wait in line? I mean, everybody's angry at that point.
Yeah, you know, really unfortunate.
Understandable. So I want to say thank you to Cindy and James for manning the board and the phones. And Chris, thanks for coming into the studio.
It was great to be here.
Yeah, this is another fun time. We'll turn it over to Lori now, who is going to pick up a mic. So, Lori, you want to say that?
Sure, okay. I can do that. I want to remind folks, if they want to do their donations, they still can do that at 610-758-8810. But more importantly, at wdiy.org, you can donate online. Again, thank you, Bill and Chris, for being here this evening. Next week, we have what we learned this year from tax filings, and I'll probably talk about some charitable giving as well. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.